Okay, let's talk about trends that are shaping the future of skincare. I want to know from you which one are fads, which ones are worth it, which ones need to leave as quickly or quicker than they arrived. I want you to please rate the following on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best and 1 being the worst.
Okay.
Okay. Microneedling.
Five.
Okay. Hyaluronic acid.
10.
Okay. Is it possible for some people to not take well to hyaluronic acid?
Not really. It's
Okay.
just moisturizer. It's like it's a fancy term for moisturizer.
Oh,
We actually
okay.
make hyaluronic acid naturally in our skin.
Oh.
People don't realize, like, when you're putting things on your skin, they're not like going into your body, into your skin. You can really only hydrate the epidermis, which is like the top layer of your skin. The dermis, which is where you build collagen, like that, you have to either hold on to collagen as you age as best as possible. Retinoids do that.
Okay.
Or like lasers or anything that injures the skin slightly can increase collagen. Microneedling, it doesn't go that deep. So you're not getting a big increase in collagen. You're temporarily kind of wiping away the epidermis, which makes the skin look like shiny and bright and pretty, but it's temporary. You might get a little bit into the dermis, but you have to injure the skin in a deeper way to make new collagen, but it also has to be controlled in the right way. Otherwise, you can get scarring. So it's like too little doesn't do much long term. Too much can create scarring. So it's finding that delicate balance.
Okay, this is great. I love this. Going 100% organic with food.
I mean, I think, you know, yeah, it's nice to be able to do that. Like, a lot of people can't afford to do that.
Right.
And I don't think it's make or break. You know, pesticides, we don't love them. There's like the Dirty Dozen, that list of like fruits that thin skin, things like raspberries, cherries, blueberries that get more pesticides into them versus like things like oranges and bananas that have thicker skin. You don't have to worry as much. I think you have to do your best. I think, again, if I tell, oh yeah, everybody go all organic, that's such a bougie answer because,
Right.
and is it going to change your skin? No, it's not going to change
Okay.
your skin. It's just like, do these pesticides do something bad to us? It is possible. How much are we actually absorbing? No one really knows. At the same time, there are some people that wouldn't be able to afford food if they bought organic, and you need to eat to live.
Right. Exactly. I love that answer. Collagen powder and pills.
Great question. Oh, I'm
Okay.
supposed to give numbers. I forgot the game.
Well, okay.
Collagen powder and pills, I also give a five. And I'll
Okay.
tell you why. Because collagen has protein, and everybody needs protein, especially as we get older, especially as women in perimenopause, or going into the aging, times with menopause. But everybody needs protein. And some people don't get enough protein, especially if you're like vegetarian, vegan, and you're not really focused on, like, you have to really then think about getting protein, or if you don't eat a lot of animal proteins. So collagen is great for protein because you need protein to heal. Like, if you have a wound, a lot of like elderly people that have wounds and they just don't eat a lot, like they cannot heal because you need protein to
Interesting.
heal. And if
Right.
you want to hold on to your collagen, or if you're getting procedures done and you need to heal and making new collagen, it's not that your collagen intaking is turning into new collagen. It's just that collagen is protein and you need protein to heal.
Right.
So I always tell people, if you want to add it, great. Like, I started adding it because I'm doing more exercise with like weights and I'm trying to get more protein into my diet, but I'm not
Right.
doing it for my skin. I'm doing it just to add protein into my diet, which helps everything other than too much protein, like meat. Animal proteins can be hard on certain organs. That's a different story. But like collagen powder and things like that, it's really just to increase your protein intake.
Okay, good to know. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Skin minimalism, using less products, simplifying your skincare routine.
I'm a big fan of simple only because I think it's less cost effective. You can sometimes, like, there's one product I love that is very expensive, and I'm like, then you'll just buy one. You're not going to buy like 10. You know, you could
Right.
buy 10 $20 things, or you could buy one $200 thing. And not that I encourage everything to be expensive. There are very, I also tell people all the time, like, I love shopping at Costco, or I buy things at Trader Joe's. Like, there's good stuff everywhere. Not that I love, well, I'm not trying to promote any single place,
Right.
but what was I gonna, and I have no sponsorships from anywhere. I only
Right.
get paid working as a dermatologist. I do not get paid elsewhere at this point in time ever. But what was I gonna say? Sorry, I lost
my minimalizing your routine. Yeah, no. What would you rate it?
Overwhelmed.
Like,
oh, minimalizing. I think also a 5, only because
okay.
Some people are like, but I love my 10-step routine. You're like, great. If it's working for you, not getting a rash, you're happy with it, stick with it.
Right.
Some people start to get a rash. Then it's like, you have to stop everything. Our skin gets like overwhelmed sometimes with too much stuff. I mean, that is real. And then it gets irritated, and that's called also perioral dermatitis. And it's just people putting too much stuff on their skin. Women get it much more commonly than men because guess what? We tend to put more stuff on our skin.
Right. Red light therapy.
Great question. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I've been asked this a lot in the last at least year or longer. And I was like, I don't know. And then what was it? Black Friday came along, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy one. Let's see what this is all about.
Okay.
And I found it very relaxing, helping me go to bed and sleep. So that was something I did not think about.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how much is it actually doing for your skin?
Right.
And again, I'm going to put it also at a 5.
Okay.
Because there are some studies, and I've been trying to read more studies about this, that show if you do doesn't have to be long, maybe 10 minutes, 3 days. It's about consistency, which people have a hard time with. A lot of these at-home tools that sometimes are safe, sometimes might not, because they're not really regulated that well. That's always the hard part. But these at-home tools all are about using them at least a few days a week for maybe 10 minutes. People will do that for a month or two, and then they quit. Not always, but some of the time. And so it is about consistency with the red light therapy. Now, the next thing people worry about is it safe for your eyes? Because it's bright.
Right.
And the answer is you probably shouldn't look directly at it. However, there are some eye studies. And again, I haven't read these studies that show that maybe it's actually helpful for the eyes. So that kind of, I'm not 100% sure on that. You should be careful with protecting your eyes. Could it help you hold on to collagen and maybe build a little collagen? Maybe slightly. Mm-hmm. I think if you like it and it feels good and it's not a big deal to you to add cost-wise, time-wise, whatever, go for it. Again, be careful with the eyes, because I do think even though some studies say maybe it's helpful for your eyes, we're worried that it could hurt the eyes. Because when you actually look at the sun over time, not just for your skin, but for eyes, you can build what are called pterygiums, which are growths over the eyes. Your skin, your eyeballs are protecting themselves from the sun by building these things. And then those have to be cut off over time. So you don't, or cataracts that come from time, things like that. We wouldn't want to increase that for anybody.
Yeah. Okay. Exosomes as an ingredient in your skin creams. These are nanoparticles that are released by cells in the human body that carry, for all the other people, because I didn't know what this was, that carry various molecules and may send signals to the skin cells to repair and regenerate. It's a controversial ingredient. It's not FDA approved.
Not FDA approved, yeah.
And there's a long way to go for safety measures, testing measures, and to ensure the ingredients deliver the desired benefits.
I'm going to go with 5 again.
Okay.
So getting a lot of molecules that we try to get into our skin, growth factors, have been a talking point for years and years. Topicals are large molecules. They cannot actually get through and pass certain layers of the skin, the top layers, to even do anything. So basically we're they might be in the product, but they're not really getting into the skin where it would do anything to help. Because they're too large of a particle, even though they're small enough, you would never notice them, but they're too
to
much.
Get through.
You have to. The skin is a very good barrier. Think about we're in a world full of bacteria, fungus, all kinds of pathogens, things that can make us sick. And our skin is a barrier unless that skin is wounded. And then things can get in. So people use that wounding, which can be through microneedling, which are tiny little wounds, lasers, which can make little wounds. And then they'll put exosomes in as growth factors. Now, will they grow new collagen faster? I think that remains to be seen. However, healing does seem to be sped up a little bit with the use of exosomes after. So that's kind of the biggest thing, is that if you use these exosome products after healing, that, or after a procedure where you're kind of breaking the skin slightly, that you will heal faster, which would be great, right? People always want to heal faster. We've started to do our own little kind of tests in the office where like we'll treat one of the other doctors and then like on one side use it and one side not. We didn't see a huge difference. I do think like it's possible this can see some improvement in the future where they kind of figure out how to like micronize it more so it can get past the skin. But then the question too is like, are these things that help with healing or like growth factors, peptides, which are like protein, like all these things that can help with healing and make like hoping to grow collagen, all that. You don't want to grow too much, right? You don't want scarring.
Right.
You don't want to make some kind of like, you know, growths that would be problematic, although that's very unlikely. So the question is, how much is it actually doing? And I think it's probably not hurting. It's just sometimes adding cost. But speeding up healing is nice for people. And I do think in that sense, that would be like the most helpful part for that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, last one. PDRN, Korean skincare treatment that involves injecting DNA from salmon semen?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Salmon, I mean, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Again, it's like probably proteins of some kind that are supposed to help with like collagen growth. Again, it probably doesn't hurt. The question is, how much does it help? That's like really what most things are. It's like you're going to pay a cost. Mm-hmm. Is it worthy of the cost? Now, if you have just like money to throw away, sure, try whatever you want. Most likely it's not going to hurt you unless you're going somewhere that's like treating too deeply and doesn't know how to heal that. And then you can have scarring. That's like worst case scenario. If like you're going to a place that does like lasers or there's something called a skin pen, all these things where they can go deeper and not know how to heal. Because if you treat to a certain depth and you don't know how to help that patient heal, you can create permanent scarring. That is worst case scenario. But like these salmon sperm and exosomes and all that, like that's just not going to happen. The question is, are they doing anything or is it just like the vehicle? So ointments, creams, gels, that's the vehicle. And when you put any of those on your skin, the skin's always going to look better. They've done studies that show if you just moisturize your skin, your wrinkles look better because it fills in the wrinkles a little bit.
Right.
So sometimes you go, oh, it looks better. But is it just the vehicle that you're putting this stuff in? So the question is, we just need better studies to show, do these things really work? And a lot of these things are not going to get studied that well. Mm-hmm. FDA approval does take a very long time and a lot of money. So sometimes just because something's not FDA approved doesn't mean it's bad. However, if something bad were to happen when someone uses that product, someone could sue you and say, well, you used a non-FDA approved. And then that's a problem.
Right.
So anyway, but the things that are tried and true, I always say, like, if you're going to spend your money, do the things that we know work. Mineral sunscreen, retinoids. Botox is amazing. It doesn't have to look crazy. You don't need a crazy arched eyebrow. You don't have to look like, you know, scared.
or a caricature of yourself.
No, but it can look smooth and nice with like normal eyebrows. I mean, you could get more lift if you want to. Some people like that like big arched eyebrow. I'm not a big fan. To me, I always say like, I don't want anything that's like a dead giveaway that you've had it done. I always tell people, I don't mind telling anybody what I've had done. But at the same time, if someone saw me across the street or I'm dropping my kids, no one would be like, oh, she had this done. You know, you should be able to get things done where they look subtle and nice and pretty.
And natural.
And natural. As we age, especially as women, it's very annoying. Men tend to age, not better. I hate to say the word better. They just like, as they age, they look more like distinguished. You know, people think of like George Clooney and people like that. As we age as women, we look angry and it sucks. And that is where Botox is amazing because that's usually like that frown that people get that makes people just look angry. And like some of my patients come to like, I look angry and I'm not angry. People ask me if I'm angry. I'm not. Or you get bags under and people are always asking me if I'm tired and I'm not tired. And like, it's because we have fat pads here and they drop and then it shows this whole under eye area. And so I don't love like under eye filler per se. I actually like to reinflate the cheek to bring it back to where it used to be. Which those are controversial in their own way because technically now people are not wanting to do filler because they're getting facelifts at younger ages, which is a whole different topic because filler does create a tiny bit of scarring. You are creating new collagen. Guess what collagen also is? Scarring. So when they're going to cut for facelifts, they have to cut through scarring. So the plastic surgeons don't necessarily love filler because of that reason. I know. But invest your money. In again, all the topicals we talked about, but Botox, a little bit of filler. A little goes a long way. You don't need a lot. Mm-hmm. And then lasers at a place that's reputable, that's not going to burn you in a bad way. Sometimes we have to burn you in the right way.
Right.
But
yes.
Don't go spending money on things that aren't tried and true and don't work, because you will just, and I've had so many patients come and tell me, it makes me really bummed. They're like, but I just spent thousands of dollars. I'm like, I'm so, and not, it wasn't with me.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm so sorry. All those things you did either are very mild, not going to do that much, or they really don't work that well.
Right.
So anyway.
This is great. Okay. Let's talk about Botox, filler, lasers, peels, and all the cosmetology offerings. Mm-hmm. What do you think, and maybe we already answered this, or you already answered this, is the biggest mistake people make when they're looking to treat themselves? What do you think they should be looking for or know about?
Again, kind of like I just said, that people, yeah, you know, invest so much money into stuff that's like, microneedling is going to be very mild. I always say when we do, because I do like fractional resurfacing, fractional CO2, which is like a deeper laser into the skin to peel this, like a layer of skin away to build new collagen. And that has real downtime. Like anything that doesn't have with a laser, it depends. It depends if you're doing surface level. Like IPL for brown spots is surface level. There's really not a lot of downtime. Spots look darker for like a week or two, and then they shed away as your dead skin sheds. You don't really peel from that. And that can have beautiful results. But it's not going to touch wrinkles, because where wrinkles happen, maybe a little bit, it helps collagen a tiny bit, but where wrinkles happen is in the dermis. So that's the second layer of skin. It's a thicker, deeper layer under the epidermis, which is like a little thin layer. You have to cause trauma into the dermis to make new collagen, which microneedling can do slightly, but usually doesn't get deep enough. The nice thing about microneedling is there's no heat. So for darker skin colors, it's a great option. Sometimes the heat with darker skin colors can cause more issues with what's called post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation, where they can make brown spots with healing, which is annoying, but can be treated. Right. But I just feel like people get sold into a lot of procedures or a lot of things that are just, the results are so mild and they're spending so much money, but it's hard. I mean, that's why, again, I do think it's nice to go to see a board certified dermatologist. I was just talking to one of my coworkers, like sometimes we'll get people that have never had anything done and they're coming to see us to go over it. And they're like, I've never had Botox and I'm nervous. I always tell people, no one can really hurt you with Botox. It can like look bad. You know, it wasn't like you have a weird eyebrow, whatever, but you can't really hurt somebody. Botulism is not like going into you with Botox or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, but not in a way that it hurts you. Anyway, but like some patients that are nervous will come to us for their first few treatments and then go, oh, this isn't so bad. And then they go right to like the med spa because it's a little bit cheaper. And I get it. Like everyone has to do what they need to do financially. Of course we like to retain, and we still do retain a lot of our patients. And often actually when I find out, actually sometimes it goes the other way where they're going to the med spa and they're spending way more than they would be spending with us, 'cause they're putting way too many units in, and we're able to get away with a lot more subtlety and like less units. It just depends. That's kind of an it depends situation. But, again, people love microneedling 'cause there's no downtime, which I totally get. And you are stripping that epidermis anytime you take your epidermis away, or strip it down, I should say, it's never fully gone. The skin looks shinier. It looks brighter. Like if you do superficial peels, you'll get that too. It's just, you're not really getting into where collagen is being built. So it's always like when patients come in to talk about cosmetics, it's like, tell me what bothers you when you look at your skin. Like,
right.
Is it this wrinkle? Is it the spots? Like treat what bothers you, because when you're spending money, you're not going to notice big differences if you're not treating what actually bothers you. Now, I'm also happy to weigh in and say like, hey, this, like, especially for necks and chests, like, hey, this discoloration bothers you. But what you're not realizing also is there's texture change, because when the collagen thins in the neck and chest, you get this like chicken skin appearance where like the little hair follicles retain these little bumps. And so it's like, okay, we can treat the discoloration, but you're going to end up with this texture change that you're still going to notice. That's part of what you are seeing when you look at the big picture of this whole thing. And so let's do resurfacing laser, because not only would that help with the discoloration, but we can grow new collagen there. It'll be smoother. And when it's smoother, the look of brown and red will actually look better because you don't have this bumpy dimpling that you were going to have if you did nothing. So it's like, what bothers you? What can we do to actually achieve these results? How much do you want to spend? Let's make like a long-term plan so mm-hmm. that we're working together. Like we're talking about over the decades, over the years for what you really need at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So when patients do come like in their 20s and their 30s and we can stick together long-term, sometimes it's like, yeah, every few years we can do a laser. Let's do your Botox every, 4 months. Let's maybe do one syringe of filler every 1 to 2 years. And then as people get older, maybe it's different. Or if we're playing catch up, that's always a little bit harder. But it'll be interesting to see what this next generation is like because they've already been so invested in skincare from an early age.
Yeah, I bet that'll be exciting for you to see. And I want to hear about it.
I feel like I'm not answering your questions, but
no, you definitely are. That was great. No, you definitely are. I grew up with cystic acne and had to go on Accutane. Do we know what causes cystic acne and are there things that we can take to help address it that, aside from Accutane?
Yeah. So cystic acne is usually a component of genetics and hormones over time. So that's why people start to get it in their teens. That's when mm-hmm. puberty is happening. Or sometimes even before the teenage years, if puberty happens earlier. Boys, especially like the higher testosterone that people get in puberty time, just makes more oil. And so what happens with acne, our hair follicle, I always say like the hair follicle and the oil gland, they come out like branches on a tree. Mm-hmm. And they're right next to each other. And the oil gland clogs up the hair follicle. And then it makes acne. So there's inflammation happening underneath that then makes this, deeper cystic acne, depending on, again, genetics are a big part. My husband had horrible cystic acne. He's been on Accutane twice. He has actually what's called the, welcome to perimenopause brain. the inflammatory triad. So the inflammatory triad is cystic acne or inflammatory acne, hidradenitis, which is more of like almost like a body acne where people get boils on the body.
And oh my gosh.
Something called dissecting cellulitis, which is like almost like inflammatory acne at the scalp. And so again, that is usually there's a genetic component to these things.
Okay.
And some people, again, my mom had horrible acne, my sister and I didn't. Like,
yeah,
it kind of can change depending on. Stress is a big part for acne. Hormones are a big part for acne. That's why, like, again, acne, cystic acne makes like a reprise in perimenopause because the hormonal changes and shifts. But it's this clogging. And so what happens on Accutane is these oil glands are getting totally shrunken only while you're on the medication.
Right.
And so while you're on the medication, that's why you get so dry, right? You're like super, super dry on the medication because your oil glands are totally shrunken. And then you kind of, it's one of the few medications where like you have to get to a certain total dose where these oil glands are not clogging the hair follicles up as much anymore. Although it can recur and it can happen again, you'll get usually some kind of like residual that comes back. However, it does usually get at some percentage permanently better. Some people need more than one course. It just depends kind of on their hormonal expression and their genetic makeup. But the problem with acne is it creates, or cystic acne, hormonal acne, that's often cystic, inflammatory acne, nodular cystic acne, there's all these terms. They create scarring, and scarring is permanent. So while acne may not be permanent, scarring is permanent. So again, we do resurfacing laser, things like that, once acne is fully treated to bring new collagen, because those scars are a loss of collagen in each little spot.
Right.
And so we try to, or even if they have thicker scars, it's too much collagen. So we're lasering some of that collagen away to smooth that out, to create more smoothness to the skin. But the problem with acne scarring, you can really only get it at the most like 80% better. You'll never get to 100%. So that's why we try to treat acne as early as possible, because once people get scarring, you'll never go back to exactly what the skin was before, which is very troublesome for people.
Right.
Some more than others. Everybody's a little bit different. But Accutane is amazing. It's been around for a long time. My mother was on Accutane. It is very safe of a medication, although there are definitely side effects that need to be discussed with patients. And I always tell people there are some people who just don't feel good on Accutane and they shouldn't stay on it. Like, if you don't feel good on something and you can't tolerate being on it, don't stay on it.
Right.
But there's nothing that works quite like Accutane to shrink acne and to shrink the oil glands. Now, they will come back eventually, these oil glands. They just don't clog the hair follicle like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some new lasers that have been made to basically like target the oil glands, so you kind of destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
They're expensive and they may or may not work. Like, the long-term effects remain to be seen.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you're answering all my questions. You're very,
by the way, and I don't love antibiotics for acne. I know a lot of people still prescribe them, but I do find they can be used and sometimes they're effective, but we do worry about antibiotic resistance. And again, topical retinoids, which we use for aging in the skin, is used all the time for acne. And that's great. It's just drying, which is the hard part.
Right.
Oh, sorry. One last thing.
Yeah.
Foods. So.
Oh, good. That's the next question.
Oh, perfect. So there are some people that believe if you like stop all dairy for 8 weeks, you can like stop all acne. I am not about food restriction. I have my own food issues that like, I'm not someone who likes restriction. I tell all my patients this, but if like some people are like, listen, I've been looking to cut out dairy. Great. Give it a try. Stop dairy for 8 weeks. Also, creatine, which I take currently now for muscle building, is a known inflammatory, you know, thing that a lot of guys, kids, you know, that are building muscle, teenagers, 20s, whatever, will take to increase muscle. And it's not like everyone should stop it, but if you're starting to get really bad acne, you may want to consider stopping it.
Right.
You know, I don't know so much about like hormones and meat and stuff and how that contributes to the acne, but maybe there's something there too. Again, you can get meat without hormones, but sometimes that's also more expensive. But whey protein, which is the protein found in dairy,
mm-hmm.
is known to be inflammatory. So I do tell people, like, when you're buying protein bars, if you eat that kind of stuff, look for more plant-based proteins, pea protein, hemp protein, soy protein. We don't like as much too because we worry about, like, pushing estrogen with soy. Although estrogen's protective for acne, so that's a whole different can of worms. But what was I going to say? If you're going to have dairy, you're better off having full fat because the higher level of fat, the lower the whey. And so even though there's good amounts of protein there. So I do recommend if you're going to have the dairy, just don't do low fat or non-fat because the whey content is much higher.
Well, that's perfect because I like half and half.
And there you go. And I like whole fat milk.
Yeah, I like whole fat milk too.
Yes.
No, these are answering,
which
actually
has its own problem for the environment and other things. Again, there's no one perfect answer to all the things, but just we're talking about
you can't
acne.
Make no.
We're keeping it. We're, they have shown that fish can be helpful for acne.
Oh.
And like
salmon?
Yeah, things like that. Again, farm salmon is not going to have as much, so you do usually want to have wild and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I just was getting, the next question was about hormonal acne and changes to the skin, which we went over, and then you just went over diet and lifestyle.
Anything that pushes male hormone tends to make acne worse. So women, we have female and male hormone, men have male hormone. So like if you take anything, so ashwagandha can make male hormone higher, which is in a lot of vitamins now for like stress and things like that. So again, that's something I tell people to stop when they're starting to break out. Doesn't mean you have to stop already, but you know, male hormone, it's become more popular as men age to do like testosterone clinics or opening up and things like that. Women are taking testosterone pellets. It's not well studied, especially for women. It's not well studied, but you get thinning hair, hair loss. You can get more acne. So these are the things people, even though it increases energy, which people love, it increases libido, which is a problem with perimenopausal, menopausal women. There are always, almost everything comes with good and bad.
Right.
And you just have to see for yourself, weigh those things out and make sure you're having a discussion with someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things online, though, that are good. And there's a lot of things online that are just not true. And there's a lot of bad stuff out there about Accutane. And again, I tell people every patient is different. We tolerate medications differently. Some people are fast metabolizers. Some people are slow metabolizers where medication kind of sits in the body longer. If something doesn't make you feel good, you stop it, you change it. But you don't have to like necessarily push through just because like, oh, this is the thing to work. It's right. not worth feeling like shit.
And it's also what works, like you said, for somebody else might not work for you. Exactly. And you have to be aware and open to that.
But don't rule out a medication just because your friend hated it.
Right.
Or maybe your friend loved it and you tried it and it sucked.
Right. Like, no, that's definitely happened with me and some of my friends. When does it make sense to stay on the natural path versus seeking a consultation with a board certified dermatologist like yourself?
I actually think if you can afford both, I would do both. I mean, we take insurance. So a lot of people are like that. A lot of naturopaths take insurance, but I know a lot are cash pay. Mm-hmm. Naturopaths do a lot more blood work than we do. And they do believe in like looking at the hormones versus we're treating more of the symptoms. Mm-hmm. I just had a long discussion with my own OBGYN about this, because where we live in San Diego, there's a lot of functional medicine naturopaths and obviously like board certified doctors in all different fields. So the thing is, you can check hormones. Testosterone is an easy one to check because it doesn't really fluctuate that much, but like estrogen, progesterone, those fluctuate a ton throughout the course of a woman's cycle. So like it has to be timed correctly. You have to have somebody that knows how to do that. There's naturopaths, functional medicine, people are trained to check a lot of blood work that we don't check, that we are trained as MDs or DOs in medical school or osteopathic school are trained very differently than the functional medicine. So we don't check as much blood work, but also the blood work that they are checking, a lot of it, not all of it, we don't think it really plays as big of a role as they are trained to believe. So there is a disagreement between the fields, but that doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong necessarily.
Right.
And so I'm not like, well, we are right. No, I mean, if you go to functional medicine, you're getting great treatment, like great. I mean, if that's what's working for you, usually I always say, I try to take like the best from like Western, Eastern medicine that I know about. I did do an integrative dermatology, like a fellowship training that was really interesting. And I learned a lot about like different minerals and vitamins and things like that. But again, I didn't go through like a functional medicine or naturopathic school. So I don't know all the ins and outs, but again, when I speak with my OBGYN, I'm like, you know, and I'm in perimenopause. Like I can feel it. The symptoms are there. I've told her all of them for like 2 years. She's like, oh yeah. Even though, you know, maybe you're younger than what people think, like you're definitely in it based on all these symptoms. She could check my blood work. They could be stone cold normal. Mm-hmm. You treat the symptoms of what is happening. And that's the same with like cystic hormonal acne, like jawline acne in women that happens here. And that sometimes will fluctuate with the period cycle or sometimes will be steady. We know that's hormonal acne. And we know if we inhibit some of the male hormone, which we use spironolactone, which is a pill that can do that, which is technically off label, that was made to lower blood pressure, but it inhibits male hormone, it gets better. So you can have perfect blood work. But if we treat the symptom, which is the acne that's happening, with inhibiting some of that male hormone and we get improvement, we know it's working.
Right.
Right? So like you kind of have to go off what's actually happening. Because when you look at women in perimenopause, let's say they all have the same blood work, but this one has hot flashes and that one can't sleep and this person's depressed and this one has low libido, but they don't all have the same thing.
Right.
Because we express things differently based on our genetics, our makeup, how we live, how we eat, how we exercise. Like we are different.
Right.
We're all human, but like we all have our slight differences.
Yeah. I think that's really important too. And that will definitely mean a lot to a lot of women that are going through perimenopause and menopause. Cause I don't feel like we talk about it enough, and this is a whole different podcast, but yeah. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. What should people be aware of or look for when it comes to their skin that would be a sign or a cause for concern? I know this because of what you and I've talked about, but let's share it with the audience.
So something that's concerning would be a new spot. Technically, you're not really supposed to get new moles after about age 35.
Okay.
So a new spot that's popping up that is growing or changing in some way. Now, moles will get darker if your skin tans. Your moles also darken in response. But especially if the borders are asymmetric, you know, it's darkening on one side, not another side, something that's bleeding, especially without even touching it, or something that's popping up and is painful. Now, there's a lot of benign things that can do exactly what I just said. We may seborrheic keratoses as we age. Those are brown spots that pop up with birthdays. And sometimes they look really scary and they're totally benign. And as dermatologists, we're very well trained to spot seborrheic keratoses. And so some people come in and they're like, oh my God, this spot is new and it's dark and blah, blah, blah. And until I look at it, I'm like, oh no, don't worry about that. And that's benign. But that same descriptor can be said for melanoma. And so if that person called on the phone and they're like, hey, I have this brown spot that's getting bigger and growing and bleeding and it's itching, I'm like, oh my God, come in, because I don't know what that is until I look at it.
Right.
And so even with telehealth, you know, some people are doing, I don't do telehealth. I really like to see people in person because so much of what we do is procedural. Mm-hmm. But like, I want to be able to biopsy it on the spot and things like that. And luckily we don't live in an area where people have to drive a million hours to get to a doctor. That's a whole other can of worms if you live in certain states and things like that. But like the same descriptors can be said for a skin cancer and a benign spot that comes with birthdays. And so anything but like new growth, changing, painful, itchy, not usually quite as bad, although some things that are bad can itch, but and again, bleeding on its own. Those are the bigger things.
Okay. How do you anticipate AI and personalized skincare solutions playing a role in dermatology?
I don't know. I mean, so much of what we do is pattern recognition. So you would think like maybe AI could be helpful. The problem is there's already been some things that have tried to be built to like be smarter than us. The problem is they weren't able to see the minor discrepancies in spots. So what happened is the machines that have been built so far to try to spot melanoma are very sensitive, which means they pick up all the spots. So they see all the spots. But they're nonspecific. So they would actually create more biopsies, not less biopsies. They think benign spots are problematic because they can't tell these subtleties. Now, as things get better, the more you feed the information to it, maybe it will be even better than a human one day. Who knows? I've had patients that are very frustrated with the amount of biopsies they get. Some people just don't want any biopsies. Everyone just wants to hear your skin is perfect all the time.
And well, of course.
I like when I can say, I would say, I love when I can say that. It's not always going to be that way. And I don't feel like, you know, we do exceptional numbers of biopsies, but at the same time, some people are like, they have either what's called dysplastic nevus syndrome, where they have tons of atypical moles. And I always tell people, you know, this may not be a melanoma, but it's definitely some kind of atypical mole. So mildly atypical moles, we don't cut out more, but that's on a spectrum. With severely atypical, which we worry could be a step before melanoma, we don't know how much they're actually going to change over time. Anytime we do a biopsy, it's a snapshot in time. So is it evolving and doing something bad, or is it going to just stay like that forever? We don't know the answer to that.
Right.
And so AI would be interesting, especially if we could get these like amazing photos that we can upload into a system that really kind of like spots changes over time. But again, it would have to be able to tell between a benign keratosis, which people get tons of over time, and like actually a new mole, which so far it cannot do.
Yeah. And I still think you're always going to need a person involved. At least I would like that. Like, I don't know.
I think we say that because it makes us feel better that we'll still be useful one day and the robots will take over. But, but so far the robots aren't as good. We'll have to see.
Okay. All right. So you went to Tulane and I love that. My brother also went there.
Oh, cool.
Something I do on my podcast is I ask a question. So we're going to end this podcast with, what is the best thing about being a dermatologist? What have you learned about yourself, others, and life that you would like to share with the audience?
The best thing is that you get to take care of people for years and years and years and like go through, like hear about their weddings. Like I was just looking at photos of one of my patients' wedding for her daughter. Like it makes me too, I love that. And like in the photo was also her son who I treated for Accutane and his skin's still doing great after years. Like I love hearing if people tell me about their trips that they're taking. I always say I learn so much from my patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also hear about like the really sad things. I've had a few patients that like at least two I can think of in the second that lost their husbands from brain cancer in the recent past. And we hear about all the cancers. And I have a patient who came in, I walked in the room and she's sobbing that she just got diagnosed with breast cancer. And she told someone, I don't know who it was, like that, you know, she had a lump and they said, oh, wait. And the mammogram was done 6 months later. And now she has it in the lymph node. And she's someone, I actually, the first day she came and saw me, I was like, this doesn't happen that often. But she walked in, I'm like, you have melanoma on your back. Like, I mean, I saw it. I didn't just know that she had her shirt off. But I was right. Like, sometimes I'm like, that is a melanoma. And it was. And we caught it early and all that. But we go through so much with people because these mm-hmm. are people that keep coming back. And there's so much love in that. And I love when I get to take care of, like, again, whole families. It's just so special. You know, it's like you're in people's lives. And sometimes that can be overwhelming, the emotions in that. Again, people go through a lot of trauma and a lot of really hard things. And it's like, I think I always like want to help them as much as I can through all that, because it's like, what weight can I take off for you? How can I make you feel good? And, you know, it's interesting with like the cosmetic thing. Some people see it as so superficial, but sometimes people, like, when they look good, they feel better.
Oh yeah.
And you can really, like, it doesn't take much sometimes. Like, you can just decrease like one of their wrinkles or make the frown go away. And they're like, man, I just feel happier. There's like biofeedback in that makes people feel better.
You're going to make me tear up. Sorry, no, I think that, no, been, I love it.
Going through a lot.
Yeah, no. And I think, look, that's that human connection that I never want to lose. That's why I don't want the robots to take over. But
yeah, they won't do that with you.
No.
They won't empathize with you.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe they can build better.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, thank you so much. This is great. Audience, listeners, we definitely want to have Dr. Joy on again. If there's questions that we didn't ask that you'd like answered, just comment below this podcast and we can always put together an outline for the next one. I will leave Dr. Joy's information below this. She is located in Encinitas, California. So if you would like to, if you're in the area and you want to schedule an appointment, please do. And my sign out for today is, if there's one thing I've learned, it's the importance of placing your health first. And why? Because you deserve it. Thank you for listening today.
Thank you.